So today's lesson is going to be all in Luke chapter 15. So I invite you to turn there so you can follow along. And Luke 15 is a very, very famous chapter, okay? And before we get into Luke 15, on the three parables that will be in the lesson, we always like to see the setting for the situation of these parables. Who was he talking to? Where was he? And what brought this about? You know, these parables of Jesus. And most of the time when you go back and look, you kind of see why he would mention these parables. Because if you look back in chapter 14, Jesus is in Jerusalem, okay? And he's down there for Feast of Dedication, or Feast of the Harvest, okay? And that's where he gave that another very famous parable of the ambitious guest. What Brent likes to call it was the problematic dinner, okay? Where the Pharisees wanted the chief seats, okay? But they were hypocrites, and they didn't want to humble themselves, so they didn't want to learn about humility, and they only wanted to invite the rich and famous, those who would come back and spoil them and scratch their backs and precipitate, okay? So they didn't learn hospitality, okay? And then Jesus goes into another parable about the urgency of the kingdom, and then the value of godliness, and then counting the cost of being Jesus' disciple, okay? So we have him in Jerusalem, and he just gave those parables at the problematic dinner with the Pharisees. And we're guessing for chapter 15 that he is still in Jerusalem, okay? Most likely he is, because the chapter before had him there for the Feast of Dedication. And Luke isn't very detailed oriented like John's gospel, where John's a lot more detailed where Jesus is. And most of John's gospel anyways is in Jerusalem, so that's very easy. And this is a famous chapter because it deals with what our attitude towards sinners should be. And the answer to that is whatever God's attitude is, that should be our attitude towards sinners. Especially when it comes to sinners who come to God and who are saved, okay, and who repent and who change themselves. So you would think that would be obvious, right? We got to think just like God towards sinners and all that. But let's go ahead and read. So I'm going to read Luke 15, just 1 and 2 to start. Now, all the tax collectors and the sinners were coming near him to listen to him. Both the Pharisees and the scribes began to grumble, saying, "This man receives sinners and eats with them." Okay? So as they look at sinners, the Pharisees and scribes, the way they look at sinners, what would define a sinner in the Pharisees' mind? How would they even come about if someone's a sinner? What are they comparing it to? What are they going off of? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then what do the Jews follow? What's their law? Law of Moses. Yes. So anybody, it could be another Jew, a Gentile, a tax collector, just anybody who's not following the law of Moses, okay? Because they saw tax collectors as sinners because they were greedy, they would overcharge and take money from their own people, and the Jews would see that as a violation of God's covenant, okay? So, which is kind of hypocritical because the Pharisees themselves stole from their people all the time. So, here come the tax collectors, okay, and sinners in verses 1 and 2, and they're looked as to being like out of duty and seeing as anti-God towards the Jews, for the reasons we just said. But here's the Son of God, Jesus, okay? And Jesus has come, and they're excited, these tax collectors and sinners, and they're accepting Jesus and listening to him and learning through Jesus. And what comes through learning? through learning comes change. Okay. I love that phrase. That's a powerful phrase. I'm proof of that. You know, my 35 years of my life, just never read the Bible, nothing, thought I could, you know, create my own God, this and all that. But through learning the Bible, I have changed. I mean, dramatically. And that's just through learning. Okay? And so that's what these tax collectors and sinners do. They're learning through Jesus, and they're going to change. Okay? But because the Pharisees and scribes don't see them as able to change, these sinners, they look at them only one way, as unclean, defiled, and they don't want anything to do with them. Okay? And Jesus sees it kind of like the problematic dinner in Luke 14. And he sees a problem with them, and then he goes into teaching a parable. Okay? Just like in Luke 14, Jesus saw the Pharisees not learning about hypocrisy, humility, or hospitality. So what does Jesus do a lot to bring up a subject and to teach him on it? He goes to a parable. He jumps right into a parable, yes. So the first two parables in Luke 15 that we're going to look at, they're almost identical. They have the exact same point and lesson. And then we have a third parable, or the last parable in the chapter, which is the longest, okay? And it's the prodigal son, the real famous chapter, parable, okay? So that's going to be the last one that we're going to go over. The first two parables have something that is lost, you know, like a sheep and a coin, okay? The third one has a person. The first two parables have something that was lost and now is found, and they're rejoicing, okay? The third parable has someone, a person who is lost, and then found. There's rejoicing, but then there's disgruntlement. So the first two parables, they're learning from the reaction to finding which is lost. And then the third parable, they're learning from the elder brother that they're supposed to see themselves as. Okay? So let's go ahead and read Luke 15, chapter 15, 3 through 7, the first parable. So he told them this parable, saying, "What man among you, if he has 100 sheep and has lost one of them, does not leave the 99 in the open pasture and go after the one which is lost until he finds it? When he has found it, he lays it on his shoulders, rejoicing. And when he comes home, he calls together his friends and his neighbors, saying to them, 'Rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep which was lost.' I tell you, in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who need no repentance." So the first parable presents a shepherd, okay? And he has 100 sheep. And where are the sheep? Where are the sheep? In the wilderness, the pasture. They're in the pasture. They're safe. They're grazing. You know, they're eating. And when he realizes that he lost one, he goes, well, what would be the reaction of most shepherds if they have 100 sheep and one go astray? You know, yeah. Oh, well, I still got 99 sheep. Okay? No, I still got 99. Oh, well, you know. And if I go after that sheep, you start justifying it. Oh, well, it may cost me more money or more time. Will it be worth it? I could come across a wolf or a thief, or it might be dangerous. Okay? And this kind of goes back to, really quick, to John chapter 10, when Jesus says that he's the good shepherd, okay? Now, the hireling, the shepherd, in this parable, won't protect the sheep because he's a hireling. He's hired to protect the sheep. Those are not his sheep, okay? So the thief comes in from a different way, and Jesus comes right through the front door because he is the good shepherd. Okay, so the reaction of the shepherd is not necessarily the same reaction that all other shepherds have. So it's kind of a unique way of looking at it, okay? But when you look at the good, as you look at God as the shepherd, okay, and the people as his sheep, even one goes away, God says, I'm going after it, okay? And what about the 99? He leaves it safe. They're in the pasture. They're not in danger, okay? So what about the righteous, the 99? They know the laws and they know the rules, okay? But one of them has gone off and they're astray. And he goes off and finds it and he's looking and seeking, okay? And then in verse 6, he said he's so happy that he tells everybody, his friends, neighbor, and they all rejoice, okay? So that sounds like a big deal. You're calling your neighbors, your friends over one sheep, okay? But they rejoice, okay? So Jesus is saying, if you understand that picture, how big of a deal it is, going and finding a lost sheep and bringing it home, okay? That's what he wants them to get that grasp, the value, okay? And that's the same way Jesus is painting the picture of lost souls here on earth that go enter the kingdom, that come back to the Father, okay? Now in verse 7, I tell you that in the same way, there will be more joy in heaven than over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous people who need no repentance, okay? So, in a sense, right here, you can say that the scribes and the Pharisees are in the first parable. They were in the flock. They're part of the 99, okay? And are they just, though? Are they righteous, just people, the Pharisees? No, they're not, okay? They're not faithful to God or to God's sheep, okay? But Jesus isn't arguing that right here, okay? Jesus is sticking to the point, saying, okay, you guys see yourself as righteous people, part of God's flock. Okay, that's fine. I'll give you that. I'll grant you that. But there's a problem with you Pharisees and scribes, okay? If you see one sheep go away from the flock, that goes away from the number, you guys are fine with that. In fact, you guys are kind of rejoicing in that, because they're unclean, terrible people in your eyes. So when they're lost, the Pharisees are basically saying, good, thanks, you know. So it may be a terrible person, but they're lost. And you guys are happy that they're lost and make no effort to bring them back. That's not the way of God, because God's will is always to seek the lost, okay? So what is it? What should be our attitude today towards the lost? How I started the lesson? Huh?
To go after.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is to have the same attitude as God towards the lost. Okay? So the idea is that the Pharisees and scribes don't have the right attitude towards the lost. Okay? Towards the sinners, the tax collectors, etc. Okay? So now, the second parable, the lost coin, Luke 15:8. Or what woman, if she has 10 silver coins and loses one coin, does not light a lamp and sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? When she has found it, she calls together her friends and neighbors, saying, rejoice with me, for I have found the coin which I had lost. In the same way, I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents in heaven. So very similar to the first one. But Jesus is basically saying, okay, if you don't understand sheep, then maybe you'll understand coins, money for the Pharisees. So he gives that parable of the lost coin, okay? And they'll understand money, that's for sure. So she lost a coin, lights a lamp, and what does she do? But before you find it, you gotta what?
Search.
You gotta search, seek, go after it, Look for it. Seek and you will find. So she goes and seeks, and then she even steps it up a notch. She even goes, starts sweeping the house. She sweeps the whole house until she can find it. Okay? So her house has never been cleaner. You know, it's probably a good thing. Probably needed some cleaning. But guys, this parable isn't about to get your wife to clean the house. So don't go hide a coin and, you know, see if she sweeps the house. That's not the point of this parable. Okay? So, oh, and by the way, okay, why would he use sheep and coins as part of this parable, these two parables?
Because in those days, those were of value.
Yes, that exactly. Sheep and coins had value. So they can relate to losing that and have the urgency to finding it because that meant value to them, okay? You know, if Jesus said the parable, oh, someone lost them, you know, a pebble or a piece of paper. You know, what's the urgency in that? There's no value in that, okay? So the true nature of the lesson doesn't have to do with lost sheep or a coin, okay? They're important, yes, all right? Coins are important, of course. If you don't have any money, you're going to be hurting, okay? Sheep are important. They give us the food and clothes and entertainment, I guess. Yes, so, but the third parable has more value, much more value than a coin and a sheep, okay? So now this parable, oh, and by the way, I really like that verse 10. In the same way I tell you, there is joy in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. I think that's just fantastic, you know, just one sinner out of the flock comes and angels are screaming and yelling, just jumping up for joy, giving God the glory. Now, this parable is really going to hit home with the Pharisees, okay? And they're not really going to like it, but that's what Jesus taught. He taught parables that, you know, not everybody would like, okay? So, the prodigal son, Luke 15, 11 through 14 to start with. And he said, Jesus said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the estate that falls to me. So he divided his wealth between them. And not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together and went on a journey into a distant country. And there he squandered his estate with loose living. Now, when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred in that country, and he began to be in poverty. Okay? So, we have a father with two sons, one older and one younger. And what does the younger son want?
His
inheritance. Estate. New King James says inheritance. I think inheritance is probably a better word for that. Yeah, he wants his inheritance. He wants what's owed to him. But what's the thing? When do you usually get your inheritance from somebody? When that person dies. So the guy is basically coming up to his dad and basically saying, why don't you die already? This younger son has a big problem, okay? But the dad does it. The dad goes and does it, okay? And the son doesn't even want to even use his inheritance, what he got, around the father. Give me what you have. Peace out, I'm out of here. To a long distant country. Okay? So he tried to get away from the father as far as possible once the father blessed him with these provisions. Okay? And then he goes, the son, he goes and squanders his estate with loose living. Okay. So loose living, everybody kind of has their own image or definition of loose living. But the older son, which we'll see later, in verse 30, kind of gives this idea how he blew that money. But when, verse 30, but when the son, when this son of yours came, who has devoured your wealth with prostitutes. So he squandered his money on prostitutes. Okay. Now, whenever we see a movie or illustration of this parable about the prodigal son, you know, when he takes his estate inheritance and goes off to a far country, we usually see him partying it up, living it up with friends and party animals and women. We don't know if that's for sure true or if he spent all that money selfishly, but we all know when you have money, your friends like to help you spend it. Okay, big time. So we don't know. And again, what is this? What are we studying right now? It's a parable. Okay, so it didn't even happen. It's a lesson. All right, so he's out there partying it up and loses his money, okay? And whatever the case may be, you know, easy come, easy go, okay? And he starts spending everything. The easier you get money, the easier to spend. You don't have that value on what we talked about, okay? And then a famine hits, okay? Verse 14. Now when he had spent everything, a severe famine occurred, okay? And he became impoverished. So the son has not thought about what? The future. He did not plan ahead. He was just looking at the good times that make you feel good, but short term, okay? He wasn't thinking about the long term. And he was unprepared, and reality just hits him like a ton of bricks, okay? So, now we'll go ahead and read verses 15 I'll go 15 to 18. So when he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine, and would have gladly filled his stomach with the pods that the swine were eating, and no one was giving him anything to him. But when he came to his senses, he said, how many of my father's hired men have more than enough bread, but I am dying here with hunger? I will get up and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. So he's broke. He wasted all that money. So what does he go do? What is his attempt to do to get some money?
Himself.
Yeah. Goes find a job. You know, he does not know what to do. Okay. The famine hit. He's got to go somewhere. Okay. So he probably hired himself out, which kind of makes more sense right here. But we don't know the details and it's just a parable. But he probably traded work for a place to stay. You know, that's what it kind of maybe sounds like. You know, maybe you can live in the barn. You could work here, but live in the barn, okay? We don't know for sure, but if he was getting paid, it wasn't that much, okay? Because he's looking at the pigs and saying, hey, those pigs have it good. So you gotta be pretty broke to be jealous of slimy, dirty pigs eating slop, okay? So he's still hurting. Even though he's got a job, he's still hurting. The son looks at the pigs, you know, and say, hey, the pigs got it better than me, okay? They're living better than me, okay? So at that moment, he comes to his senses, okay? Once he realizes he's, you know, the world says hit rock bottom. ladies and gentlemen, that is rock bottom right there. When you're jealous over pigs, okay? And it's kind of a come to Jesus moment, you know? Even to today's world, when people hit rock bottom, sometimes that's what it takes, you know, for some people. We don't wish it on anybody. Nobody wants to go through that. And it's just an uphill battle from then on, you know? But to get up that hill, who do you need? Jesus, for sure. He's the one who strengthens you, okay? And he's thinking, the younger son, it was pretty good at my father's house. You know, what was I doing? What made me think about doing all this stuff, okay? But he doesn't just see himself going back to the father's house and just picking up back when everything was normal. You know, hey, your son's home and all that. No, okay? Because where he left off back home, he knows he's done a terrible thing, okay? So he came to his senses that he hit rock bottom, he needs help, and that he knew he did something terrible. And through the famine, through the loose living, through traveling, this and all that, he was learning. And he learned all of that, and he changed. He changed big time. He knew he messed up, hit rock bottom, and he did a terrible thing. In fact, he says in verse 18, I will get up to my father's, get up and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. So he's basically repenting right there. He changes. I'll even be a servant on what they're eating, you know. They're eating better than me. Okay, so now, let's see here. So that the son comes up with a plan, you know. He's going to humble himself and go back to the father. So let's read 19 through 24. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as your hired. Let me go back a verse. Okay, I'll start at 18. I'll read that again. So I will get up and go to my father and will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me as one of your hired men. So he got up and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion for him. And he ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in your sight. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. So he says it to the father right there. But the father said to his slaves, quickly bring out the best robe and put it on him. And put a ring on his hand and sandals on his feet. And bring the fattened calf and kill it. And let us eat and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and has come to life again. He was lost and has been found. And they began to celebrate. Okay, so he came up with that game plan to go back home to the father, but as a servant, as a lowly, humble, sinning servant, slave. He would have been a slave, okay? So the son repents, okay? And the son represents the tax collectors and sinners. The first two verses that we read, it says tax collectors and sinners were running up to Jesus and learning his teachings, okay? So the son, representing the tax collectors, okay, and the Pharisees are seeing the tax collectors and sinners as lost sheep, never coming back. We're never helping them out, okay? But Jesus is coming to them, hoping that they will be like his son, and they will come to their senses and be willing to change, okay? So you don't get a son to return home if you just cut them off totally, okay? So that's important with us in relationships today, all kinds of relationships. You know, if you stop speaking to someone or all that, you got to leave an avenue, some way of coming back. Because if the father totally cut off the son, he would never have been able to come back home. So we always got to leave that avenue open for some people to come back. You cannot cut someone off just totally. So the son, not asking to treat him as a son, but to a hired slave. And he'd be happy with that demotion, okay? And he already had all the possessions of the fathers and squandered it, okay? So the son realizes he doesn't deserve all this of what the father is giving him and asking him, okay? And in verse 20, he got up and came to his father, who saw him afar off, which suggests the father saw the son coming afar off. So which suggests, you know, that fatherly love for his son, looking for his son and son at the horizon every day, just waiting for the son to come back. Same thing with God and sinners. He's just looking for them to come back. So the father says, sees him and reacts and has compassion. Underline that word compassion in there, because that's what the main key is right here. The father has compassion for the son, okay, and runs to him and kisses him and says all those things. Yes, son, you're saying all these things, but no. You're not going to be a slave or a servant. You are going to be my son. And they began to celebrate and everything. They began to celebrate because the son was dead. Literally? No. But in his mind he was, and spiritually he was dead. He was lost and he was found, okay? The father could celebrate because the younger son came to his senses and the son was willing to change. So the father didn't want just his son to come back. That's one thing, the son to come back, okay, whatever. But what if he didn't change? The whole celebration was that he was dead spiritually in his mind, but he hit rock bottom, came to a Jesus moment, repented, and changed himself. So going to the Father is one thing, but you got to go to him in changing yourself. Okay? Remember the problematic dinner in Luke 14? He who exalts himself will be humbled. He who humbles himself will be exalted. The son was coming, the younger son was coming to the Father humbly as a slave servant, and the Father exalted him. Jesus, the master teacher, his parables. How he connects them all and all that. So the Father will humble you, okay? God adopted us, okay? So we could cry out, Abba, Father, we have changed, repented, come to us, okay? So the Father exalts him, okay? Now, here's the part. The Pharisees are represented by the older brother, disgruntlement. Verse 25 and 4. Now his older son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing, and he summoned one of the servants and began inquiring what these things could be. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he became angry and was not willing to go in. And his father came out and began pleading with him. But he answered and said to his father, look, for so many years I have been serving you, and I have never neglected a command of yours. Yet you have never given me a young goat so that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son, the younger son of yours, came, who has devoured your wealth with prostitutes, you killed a fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you have always been with me. All that is mine is yours. But we had to celebrate and rejoice, for your brother of yours was dead and has begun to be alive. And he was lost and has been found. Okay. So we got a third character right here representing the Pharisees who's jealous, okay? He comes in from the field where he should be working and all that. He inquires what's going on. And the master or the servants tell him, you know, your son came home and your dad and all that. Very unhappy. He was jealous. Jealous of the younger son. Okay? And not only was he jealous, he wasn't going to go into the celebration. I'm not even going to go in there. You guys party it up. Okay? And what do you think the celebration represents when somebody is saved? Heaven, the kingdom. That's the celebration right there. The son wasn't even going to be willing to go in to the celebration. The father had to come out to him. Okay? Come out of the kingdom to the son. Okay? And the father says it like it is. You've been with me this whole time. Whatever was mine was yours the whole time. We could have had a party every day since you were here. It does not change your faith with me at all. It doesn't change anything. Okay? No impact on you at all. Alright? So, this is just a perfect parable for the Pharisees to hear. And I could just see them being disgruntled too. You know? How dare this carpenter talk to us like that? This and that. So, it just shows what kind of people the Pharisees are and their attitude towards the lost. They don't have the right attitude at all. So, in closing the last minute, what about us today? You know, do we look at people who are sinful and who are straying out in the world? Do we say to ourselves, they'll get what they deserve? You know? No. We got to be happy. Well, first, we got to seek them. We have to go after them. Bring them back, and if they're brought back, rejoice and be happy. So we got to be careful about thinking like the older brother, being jealous. You know? Well, I've been in the church for 20 years. I've never sinned straight off, and then so-and-so goes off, squanders money, comes back. What about me? God's saying, don't act like that. And it's very easy to do that. I can understand that. It's understandable, but that's not God's attitude. Okay? So, we have to make sure that we're not like the older brother and act just like God towards the lost. Okay? That's the lesson. So, thank you guys so much for listening. Appreciate it.